Welcome to the Mattcast. This is a podcast that strives to bring the church world and the art world a little closer together. I'm Matt Anderson, and I'm grateful that you could join us. I'm going to spend the next few episodes speaking about our artistic identity, because really, as creatives, this is the place from which all of our creativity flows. And you know, in our world today, people are on a mad search to figure out who they are. And whether it's because they're so longing to stand out from the crowd, or other voices have crowded their head and their heart so much, some are taking even drastic measures in efforts to find out their identity. So in our search to discover who we are over these next few episodes, maybe we need to start by identifying who we are not. And I want to use a Bible story to illustrate that. It comes from John chapter 5. Verse 1 says, "Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem, near the Sheep Gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, 'Do you want to get well?' 'Sir,' the invalid replied, 'I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me.' Then Jesus said to him, 'Get up, pick up your mat, and walk.' At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked." So let's look at this man for just a moment, this invalid. He had been an invalid, Scripture says, for 38 years. So for me, here's what I infer from that. Since Scripture goes to the trouble of giving us the number, I infer that he wasn't like this from birth. Otherwise, I think Scripture would say this. It would say he was invalid from birth. So at some point, something happened to this man. He was living what we would call a normal life. He'd been healthy. He'd been able to walk. But either he suffered some sort of an accident, or he was inflicted with a disease that rendered him without the ability to walk. Something unfair had happened to him. And now here he was at this pool of water in the city of Bethesda, and every day, someone would bring this man here, because obviously he couldn't get there on his own. Someone would bring this man here, and they'd lay out this little mat that he would sit on. And legend had it that at some point, the waters would begin to spontaneously move. And the legend was that the first person who could get into the water when that was happening would be healed. And so there he would be. Historians tell us that this actually might have been a natural hot spring, and so it would just start to naturally bubble, and those around it had supernatural thoughts of what was going on. You know, I mentioned a few weeks ago that you can do a great study based on the questions of Jesus, and when he asks a question, you know something is about to go down. And in this story, this may contain what I think is his best question of all, because it's a question not for so much a lame man or an invalid 2,000 years ago. It's a question that I think rings out to the world today. It even rings out to the church today. And when Jesus sees this man, he asks him this question: Do you want to get well? Now think about that on the surface. Here's a man who couldn't move under his own power for 38 years, and some smart aleck shows up. He's like, hey, you want to get better? And you're like, you know, if I could move, I'd hit you right now. In all the years that I was a pastor and I would go to hospitals to visit people, I didn't lean over so that I could look them eyeball to eyeball in their hospital bed and say, do you want to get well? I mean, they'd probably take their IV and wrap it around my neck, because it would be, on the surface, it's an insulting question. But I don't think Jesus was asking about his physical condition. I think he was talking about this man's identity, because as we know, Christ sees past the outer layer. And though 38 years before, this man had been victimized, at some point, this man's identity had become, I am a victim. We live in a world that celebrates victims. In fact, people can even make a cottage industry out of it. I mean, I see people who almost seem to make things up in their need to be a victim of something. Even people who grew up in really good, prosperous homes with Christian values, it's almost as if people have to manufacture something that they've been victimized by, because then it gives them the right to be heard, I guess. It's as if only victims get the microphone. And so whatever it takes to be heard, we do. There was an old game show in the 50s called Queen for a Day. And here's the gist of the show. They bring on two women, and whoever could tell the saddest story would become queen for a day and get all these wonderful prizes. And it's as if we've never stopped playing that game show. Whoever can tell the saddest story is the person we'll listen to. And the problem is, whoever tells that story gets validated by it, and it begins to reinforce what got them the attention and love in the first place. The funny part is, it's as if people who grew up in functional Christian homes almost feel the need to begin everything with an apology. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't grow up in a home like yours. I just don't apologize. That's the way it's supposed to be done. Please don't feel like you don't have anything that you can say or contribute. You're living it out the way the Lord intended in Scripture. So no apologies are necessary. Now, let me be clear here. I am not advocating dysfunctional, pretend that didn't happen, we don't talk about that mentality, where we just pretend and we put on a happy face and we suffer in silence. I mean, when things happen to us, when trouble or trauma visits us, yes, we need help. We need help from Jesus. We need help from spiritual, mental health professionals, because we don't just get over it. And believe me, I tried. What I'm talking about in this episode is a victim mentality, in which being a victim becomes who we are. It becomes the vehicle through which we receive validation and attention and love. And I think this is what Jesus, in his omniscience, saw in this invalid when he asked him the question, do you want to get well? So I want to spend the rest of this episode going through what I think, and they're found in this story, five symptoms of a victim mentality here in John chapter 5, to maybe see if we have allowed trauma to become our identity. Number one, the number one symptom, I think, of a victim mentality is avoidance. Perennial victims successfully avoid the real issue on the table. By that mean, getting well. And they become obsessed with petty conflicts that only reinforce what they conceive as their victimhood. If you read the scripture, you'll notice that the that the invalid does not answer Jesus' question. Jesus says, "Do you want to get well?" And the layman goes, "Hey, I don't have anyone to help me into the pool. Every time I try to get in, someone else beats me to it." He didn't answer the question. Did you notice that? That's a yes or no question. And when we're not healthy, but walking with Jesus, he will sometimes ask us, "Hey, do you want to get well?" And he'll identify things in our life that are doing us harm. And either we say yes, and we embrace that process, and we deal with the changes that come from it, or we just avoid the question altogether because we frankly don't want to get well. In other words, we don't want anything to change. Can I say this, my friend? Just because something is familiar doesn't mean it is right. Just because we've adopted a way of surviving doesn't mean it is a way of thriving. I mean, maybe there's something that's doing damage to our body or our soul or our mind. You have to know Jesus will not allow us to live in that because he loves us. He wants us to live an abundant life. So he will ask us, "Okay, do you want to get well from this?" And so we either submit to the Lord's healing or we avoid the question. But then if we avoid the question long enough, we start avoiding him. And then we distance ourselves from him to avoid hearing the question again. And whenever people, I think, fall into this syndrome of a victim mentality, avoidance is usually one of the first symptoms. The second one is isolation. People with a victim mentality adopt a skewed idea of relationships. If you asked a perennial victim, "Define for me friendship," to them, friends are those who enable them to continue in their pattern of behavior. And if they don't, they simply get relegated to the bleachers or just thrown out altogether. Because if anything attempts to correct this, oh no, that can't happen. And so perennial victims find themselves very isolated because most people, if they're healthy, can't stand that and realize it's a waste of time. You'll notice that the invalid, he says, "I have no one to help me into the pool. I have no one." See, this is the goal. This is the goal of our spiritual enemy. He wants to isolate us from people who tell us the truth, starting with Jesus and then people who represent him on earth. I am sure that this man had probably sabotaged all of his friendships. He had probably pushed people away and then pitied himself for his aloneness. Here's what you need to watch out for. When you start hearing the absolute words like everybody, nobody, always, never, you can tell someone is straying into a victim mentality. You'll hear people say, "No one understands me," or "Why does this always happen?" And the only way we stay in this funk is by pushing people away who actually matter. People who have a godly narrative, who will not let us sit by the pool and waste years and decades away. But unfortunately, the perennial victim is more than happy to reinforce the false narrative that they always get the short end of the stick.
From Washington, it's time to meet the nation. Good morning. Welcome to Meet the Nation. I'm your moderator, Hal Howard. Right now, Congress is debating another stimulus package to help Americans who have lost their jobs as a result of the coronavirus. The only question is, how much will or should it cost? Two members of Congress joined me with their proposals, Democratic Congresswoman Rita Goldsmith from New York and Republican Congressman Dan Bartner from Georgia. Congresswoman, let's begin with you. What is your party currently proposing to help the tens of millions of Americans who have been affected by this virus?
Hal, I think it's very clear that we have not done near enough for the American people during this crisis. That's why I am proposing a $3 trillion stimulus package that will assist by giving individuals $2,000 apiece, couples $4,000, and an additional $1,000 per child. We call it the NOICE Act. Need intervention for citizens everywhere.
Wow, Congressman Bortner, that's an aggressive proposal with a catchy name. How do you respond?
Well, actually, Hal, we don't think it's high enough. That's why we are proposing the HUG Act, which stands for Help Us Government. It is a $4 trillion stimulus package, with each individual receiving $2,500 and an additional $1,500 per child.
Well, Congresswoman, you're being nice while the Republicans want to give America a hug. Your response?
Well, I wasn't quite finished, Hal. Let me also mention that in addition to our proposal, we are also including an additional $500 billion for what we call the FOCUS Act, which stands for Free Oil Changes Across the U.S., to help everyone get back on the road. This also includes one free touchless car wash per automobile.
And Hal, I also failed to mention that in addition to our proposal, we are also proposing the GRASS Act, which stands for Grounds Renewed and Securely Serviced. We will be offering free landscaping and lawn services to every home in America for a month. It's just an additional $1 trillion, but we want Americans to know we care through lawn care.
Yeah, I see. So how do you...
And I should also mention, Hal, that... I should also mention that since salons and barbershops will be reopening, that your next haircut or hairstyle is on us. It's only $100 billion, but I think it's the least that we can do. We call it SMOIL, Salons Mean I Look Excellent Act. Because who doesn't want to smile, Hal?
That's a good point. Who doesn't want to smile, Congressman?
Well, in our plan, we recognize the stress that everyone is under. So we will be offering an additional $200 billion for a free massage to every single American. We call it the Massages Over Mayhem, or MOM Act, because who doesn't love mom?
Interesting point. Congresswoman, are you saying you don't love mom?
Well, I must say, Hal, that I have saved the absolute best for last. It is an additional $20 trillion package in which we will pay you a salary to stay home for the rest of your life, have free food delivered to your home, cleaning services, transportation services for life, and pay all your utilities. We call it the FLAG Act, Feel Like a God, because if we really care about this country, we should support every bill that has a positive or patriotic acronym.
Congressman, are you saying you don't love the flag?
Anyone want a puppy?
Well, I have to say to both of you, aren't you concerned with all this spending that eventually you might bankrupt the country, endanger our national security, and end our American way of life?
Oh, that's hilarious.
Hey, are you new in town?
That's the funniest thing I've heard all month.
Yeah, be sure to see all the sights while you're in Washington.
Well, there you have it. Thanks for joining us on Meet the Nation. We'll see you next week if we haven't been invaded.
Let me give you just three more symptoms of a victim mentality, because I do think it is something so pervasive in our world and even in the church, frankly. The third one, we've talked about avoidance and isolation. Number three is identity transfer, and this is really what gets to the heart of the matter. When our adversity becomes who we are, then we have strayed into a victim mentality. I think this is why so many people don't want to get well. Ask any pastor or any mental health professional who starts to counsel and work with someone who really wants to meet with us. And I can tell you probably 80 to 90% of people fall into this category. When you start, it's all about tell me your story. Tell me what has happened to you. And they are very happy to do that, and it's a very cathartic experience. But then eventually, you have to get away from that, and you have to turn to, so now let's look at what makes you tick and causes you to make the wrong decisions you're making. And you know what happens 80 to 90% of the time is that their schedule suddenly gets really super busy. And, I don't know if I can, I don't know. This is really taking a lot of time. There's a reason for that, because now they're faced with the, do you want to get well question? And they don't, because if it has become who they are, they're scared of anything changing in that realm. I had a young man years ago who for, probably about 3 years, every youth service, he would ask for us to pray for his father, that his father would come to know the Lord. His father was an unbeliever, and you know, we would take prayer requests, and without fail, every week he said, "Pray for my dad. He's not saved, or he needs the Lord." Well, an interesting thing happened after 3 years. His father came to a Sunday morning service and committed his life to Christ. And I never saw that young man in youth service again. Isn't that amazing? You would think, isn't this what he wanted? Isn't this what he wanted? But then you found out he had become the kid with the unbeliever as a father. That had become his identity. It had been the thing that caused people to care about him, I think he thought. And so now when that was taken away, he didn't know who he was anymore. You see, for the perennial victim, the worst thing that can happen is answered prayer. The worst thing that can happen is healing, because they have allowed their tragedy to become who they are, and they will hold onto it at all costs, like Gollum and the Ring. So getting well to them means, now who am I? And that's why this is so dangerous. Number four symptom, of a victim mentality is blame. And this is sort of the born loser mindset. This is the idea of, well, I must have missed that day of class because everyone else seems to know what's going on, but I don't. A victim always believes they are born to lose and that God really has it in for them, that he just plain likes other people more. This is how dangerous this mentality is as it grows and metastasizes in our hearts. We start to believe the absolute worst about God. We will believe on a religious level that he loves us. We just don't think he likes us that much. Here's how the invalid puts it. Someone else goes down ahead of me. Yeah, how about that loser? But his healing was staring at him in the face. Jesus is right in front of him. And all he can focus on was, you know, if it weren't for that guy, maybe I could have been healed. Every day of our lives, our healing stares us in the face. And he's asking the question, are you going to live your whole life as a victim? Or do you want to get well? Here's the fifth and last symptom of a victim mentality. It's self-absorption. I like to call it I-me disease. Here's the way he responds again in verse 7. Listen to the first-person pronouns here. I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. And when we live in this long enough, and believe me, I can right now rattle off 3 to 5 people off the top of my head who have gone to this level, where they are so fixated on their own injustice that they just cannot move. They can turn into people who say, oh, but enough about me. What do you think of me? You know, they're so wrapped up in themselves. But if we become a perennial victim, we will constantly have to find new people to feel sorry for us, as we will simply exhaust others who at least thought they wanted to help us. But then when they see that victim identity people don't want help, it just becomes a fruitless cause. Perennial victims are sympathy junkies, and they have allowed pity to become the currency of their life. And all I can say is this is not how it was meant to be. You are not a victim. Jesus' advice to the one with victim mentality is the same as the invalid. Get up, pick up your mat, and walk. Jesus will not physically lift you from that spot, because you have been carried way too long as it is. Jesus is saying, it's time for you to have the faith to realize that you still have a life to live in me. So get up, pick up your mat, and start walking. If you have been the victim of trauma, if you have been abused or raped or neglected or abandoned or inflicted with a life-altering disease, I am not telling you to just pull yourself up by the bootstraps, because on your own, you really can't. Spiritually and emotionally, you are just as lame as the man at the pool. But I want you to know that the healer is staring you right in the face, and he is asking the question, do you want to get well? Take his hand. Admit that the victimhood has become your identity. Receive needed love and grace from him. And then walk. Start out on a course of healing. It's going to be work, because you're going to have to deconstruct this false identity that you've built for yourself. It's going to be painful, but what you're going to realize is people are really going to like the real person. We cannot allow the trauma to become who we are. we can use it creatively as an agent to inspire and help people, but it cannot become us. There's a huge difference between the two. And as artists, I pray we will not allow these things of life to hamper us forever, because there is walking to do. Well, we appreciate you being a part of the Mattcast. Our music is by Sound of Fusion. We hope to see you again soon. This has been a production of Monumental Ministries. If you'd like to see more info about our books and resources, go to mattministry.com. Thanks for having me over. I had a wonderful time.